Hi.
Hi.
How's everybody?
Nice ET mug.
I like that ET mug.
Yeah, it was a gift from my mom.
I did love that the Trash Can Paul meme this morning that was a combo of yeet, like Kanye West, and then ET, so it was yeet.
Yeah. I did. It was, yeah.
And there was a good, like, bad Photoshop job.
Yeah, like Kanye West's face on ET's body or something.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah.
It's a good
meme. Show we all want to see.
I would yeah. Totally watch that.
Maybe that's the next.
Figure out who the Elliot is in that situation.
God. Maybe that's the next evolution. Did you ever see that thing where, like, Kanye West tried to relaunch Crank Yankers? Did you ever hear about this?
No.
This is one of the funniest little bits of internet ephemera that, like, you know, Crank Yankers was, like, the puppet prank call show.
Yeah.
And he was apparently, like, a huge fan, and I think it was already off the air, and he had the idea to, like, bring it back, but, like, brand it as his thing.
Uh-huh.
And there's, like, a pilot that they made, and there's some behind-the-scenes footage that you can find of this, like, defunct Kanye West Crank Yankers pilot, and there was a sketch where he played Han Solo, and he got Kim Kardashian to play Slave Leia.
Oh, my God.
And this was, like, I don't know if he's on the thing talking about, like, basically, like, yo, I just thought that'd be awesome, so I thought I'd have her come be Slave. But, like, that's how they met, I think. Like, that's basically, if I understand it correctly, okay. They met.
Now I can't believe I don't know this.
Yeah, there's like behind the scenes footage of Kim Kardashian in Slave Leia outfit also, with Kanye West as Han Solo, like fucking like 7 years before
too.
They got married.
Yeah.
Like a long time before.
Like you wanna like you have the ability to get that done and you're like, I just wanna meet this broad.
No, I
and
think so that's what like, it was.
I'm gonna get
convoluted, yeah.
I literally think that's what it was, that it was just like, you know, I've got all this power, like who's the hottest woman? I'm gonna get her to dress up as the hottest like fetish character idea.
I mean,
like,
that's, we could argue about that, but
no, I mean that
no,
was,
I'm kidding.
That was his take at the time. It's like,
wait, so I'm gonna introduce Nate.
That's 2007. No, I'm looking at this now. There's a whole like on Wired like oral history of the failed puppet show.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, cool.
So our next, so our yeah. So we'll get back to that because you could probably do a really funny like shitty Blacklist script that's about the failed.
Yeah,
Kanye
you could
West
for sure. Yeah.
thing. Okay, so we're probably leaving all of that in. If you've just tuned in and you don't know what's going on, this is Cahoots.
Hello.
I'm Ben Collins.
I'm Kate Devaney.
Yeah. And we have a guest that you may or may not know. It's my friend Nate Madison.
Hello.
I say friend now because, you know, formerly manager.
Yeah.
And now you are a producer.
Yeah, it's not just a transactional relationship anymore,
yeah.
Ben. Yeah,
we get to hang out.
Do it.
You're allowed to be friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Which we always were.
Yeah,
we get to
split the bill now these days.
Yeah, it's true. I don't expect you to pay for everything. But for years, that's the best part. If you don't know, the best part about having a manager is when you get set on like play dates. Like that's how, you know, we could tell so many stories, but yeah, you get to get drunk on somebody else's dime and sometimes you get rides home after that.
That's the best part of being a manager is having an expense account and just like being able to hang out with like people that you want to hang out with and then like pick up the bill and seem like you're...
And I'm going to say something kind of douchey, but also just being a girl in your 20s, it's sort of... It's all sort of the same.
Being a writer is the closest thing I've ever got to being a girl in her 20s. So it's like the only time anybody ever treated me like that. You know?
Yeah.
It's the only time like anybody like really tries to get my
attention. Just walked
over
and was like, do you want a cocktail? Are you okay? I want to make sure you're comfortable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the thing. So now you don't have an expense account anymore, do you?
I don't know what I have anymore.
Yeah. Being a producer is different.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I guess, I mean, I don't know.
Wait, do you want to plug anything about what you're doing or is it all just sort of?
Yeah, I mean, sure. Officially I've left 10 years really of managing writers and directors and a handful of producers and actors. And have linked arms with a longtime friend and client and now collaborator, a director named Hiro Murai. And
you've heard of him.
Yeah.
I think it's worth saying like Atlanta, like for people.
If you're not already aware, he's the director EP of Atlanta and he directed this music video called This Is America with a longtime collaborator of Donald Glover or Childish Gambino. And so we are, you know, in addition to that, he's been directing episodes of Barry and, you know, all sorts of different things over the last, you know, whatever it's been now, 12 years of directing, I'm sure. So we have been, yeah, moving into sort of a new phase of our relationship as well, and kind of go off and make some stuff through a relationship we have with FX, but then additionally looking at, you know, doing features and television outside of that, and, you know, making some things. That's the idea. And,
so crazy.
You know, ideally, you know, supporting and fostering a new generation of filmmakers and artists and storytellers in that capacity.
So. And when did you, at what point in being a manager did you kind of figure out that you were going to probably end up doing this?
That's a good question. I don't know if I have had a set point. I mean, I think that I always, my first job in working in entertainment, I guess, if we're just going to lump it all into one category, was assisting a director named David Nutter. And, you know, I don't think he would ever remember or recognize me, but...
I did not know. Wait, he was an X-Files director, right?
I'm sure.
He did procedurals forever, right?
Was sort of this big network pilot director at the time that I was jumping into working with him. We were working on, I was assisting him and a TV creator and showrunner named Josh Friedman as they were.
Josh Friedman.
I did not know any of this, actually.
So, I haven't told you this? No. I can't believe this.
Scott Derrickson's like super good friends with him because they did Snowpiercer, which got redeveloped, I guess. But
Kate did storyboards for Scott Derrickson's movies.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah.
He's doing like Foundation now or something, right? Isn't he? Like,
I haven't caught up. But Josh is like one of those perennial, like, yeah, creating something big sort of directors and or creators. And then, you know, David Nutter, at the time that I worked for him, had directed something like 13 or 14 pilots that went to series in a row.
Yeah,
so he was sort of known as this like pilot director with the Midas touch. Probably like next to James Brooks, like one of the most like successful TV directors.
I think
15 episodes of X-Files, by the way. That was right.
There you go.
I think there is some statistic.
But he also he directed the Red Wedding episode of Game of Thrones.
Wow,
and the Walk of Shame episode of Game of Thrones. He's like he does some of the big, you know, and he directed a bunch of like Entourage and like, you know, a lot of HBO episodic, but he was like
one of those guys.
Yeah.
I think I remember seeing a stat that like he's actually pulled more money from DGA than like any other director simply because of that.
I would believe that.
Whereas like a lot of people are getting producerial fees and stuff, you know, but like,
well, cause yeah when you're, I mean, you know, if you're familiar with how those deal structures work, typically if you're a pilot director and like, especially if you're like a known, like can get stuff done and made into series sort of pilot director, you have not only a really great quote as a for your directing fee, but then you also stay on and make money on the show to some degree in perpetuity.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's done very well for himself. And so anyway, I worked for him and Josh as just sort of like an assistant in the production office on the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which was like Lena Headey pre Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so you know, and it, but I you know I kind of was raised on, I guess you could say, like the director's label, you know, DVDs, you know, the Gondry and,
oh, sure,
and Spike Jones and, you know, and Cunningham sort of stuff. So I always wanted to like work in proximity with filmmakers from a very early stage. And, you know, I did that for a long time from a representation standpoint, you know, working not only with writers, but also with directors. You know, I think it sort of happened very organically along the way of like, okay, well, I think I know how to step in here and help protect a filmmaker's process and, you know, and find ways to sort of, you know, grease the rails on getting things into production.
Yeah.
And I've been doing that, you know, from a representation standpoint for a long time and now doing it more from a producerial standpoint. So anyway.
Yeah. I figured it out within about, I don't know, 3 months of knowing you.
That's flattering. I'll take it.
No,
sure.
I was like, this guy's probably going to stop being, I didn't know when exactly, but I was like, at some point he'll just be producer that I work with. And that's,
he's
cool.
Going places.
There you go.
Yeah. It was very obvious to me. I can't,
on
it's
the
funny because I can't quite say exactly what gave me that impulse, but it was some, I don't know. It was something.
Well, yeah. I mean, I always took a, I try to take a very kind of empathetic and creative approach to working with clients. You know, it was always, you know, not just looking at it from a deal making standpoint, but looking at it from a, you know, what are we trying to accomplish here in a body of work and in a single piece of whether it's a, you know, TV episode or a, you know, a feature or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and trying to find the best sort of way to see that through and into, you know, being made.
Well, you went to film school, right?
I studied film in school. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it, was it, what was it? Did you get a degree in film? I can't remember. You told
yeah,
me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I had like a communications and like yeah. film studies and production, yeah. like focus. And I was like pre-med for the first 2 years of college at UW-Madison.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I did not know that.
And then like,
hard
yeah.
right.
That makes yeah. It was a hard, right. It was like a bad semester where I had like a complete, like, you know, like I had like anxiety attacks and like a peptic ulcer, and I was like, I need to get the hell out of this
wow.
focus. And then I jumped into film studies, and like the school at UW-Madison had this really good film program that was set up by this scholar named David Bordwell. And
he wrote one of the books that I think I might have, mm-hmm. one of Bordwell's books. And he was like, we studied him when I went to film school.
Yeah, yeah, he was sort of like the leading academic on Hong Kong cinema and Asian cinema and set up this really interesting film studies program there. So anyway,
your senior thesis essay thing about the use of melodrama in auteurist cinema.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which you've yet to let me read, but you've told me about it, and I remember.
I'll be happy to send it to you.
We'll be posting a link on that Goats.
Exactly.
Downloadable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I hope that was really embarrassing that I just said that.
No, that's really fine. Yeah. Yeah, it was like a study of, actually, like, I'm seeing the Magnolia shooting script on your yep. table, and it was like, literally like a comparison of like Magnolia and the Lars von Trier film with
Dogville.
Dogville, yeah, and like and the use of like melodrama tropes
mm-hmm.
in auteur sort of like lexicon. Anyway, I don't know.
I think that's really cool though. Yeah, that's why I brought it up, because I think it's, you know, which is funny because how many people who are managers do you think? I mean, is it something that people go to film school thinking they're going to be a filmmaker, then decide to be?
My manager, Kaylee Marsh, also went mm-hmm. to film school.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, she even directed, while still in school, directed something for, like, a local, I don't know, like, network or something. And she's like, not doing that.
Yeah.
Don't want to direct. Good. But she just found that.
Yeah, I think that's probably, I think that managers, especially on the lit side, tend to have a real, have a creative backbone, you know, and that's kind of why that's what sort of in the different areas of representation, what draws them towards management versus agenting, which has more of a kind of transactional, like excitement around the making of the deal sort of approach. I know agents who had initially intended to be directors and
mm-hmm.
Or artists of some kind, and found themselves, you know, advocating on behalf of artists and stuff.
It kind of seems to me, because I also came from the art department, so like I had a lot of friends that went to film school and then mm-hmm. got into like production design or something like that. And I think when you're like 17, 18 years old, you're just like, I don't know, like directing's what you do
for
movies.
Yeah, it's the only thing you know.
Yeah, and then you're like, oh, well, you know, maybe I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, even as a writer, that was like, I went to film school just assuming I'd be a director, and maybe
like an anomaly though. Like, yeah, like you were always just.
Oh yeah, no,
like
I'm the
leather
I'm the,
patches on the jacket.
Well, I'm the weird ones, and you studied architecture. You were going to be a doctor, apparently, or thought you were. And it's like I was
right.
the one weirdo that like, no, I'm going to film school. That's all I did. Applied to one film school,
yeah.
got in, did the thing. But the only change was that I met Kevin and realized he was a better director than me, and
right.
decided that at a certain point I'd be better as just a writer. But like,
well, and Kate, where are you from?
I was born in Memphis and I was raised in Southeast Missouri.
Okay, yeah. So I mean, like you're both from the Southeast, and I'm from the Midwest. And we don't grow up around you know, the LA or even the New York sort of film scene. You have no context for it.
Not at
all. Or even what the hell all the names at the end of a movie or TV show really mean, and the fact that that's just sort of like the tip of the iceberg in terms of like the people who have touched a project before it's seen by an audience. So you know, if you're career ambitious and from a place that doesn't, you know, have a film program or a film sort of community, then you have zero idea what the hell any of it means. You just go like, oh, I'll be a director. And then you move out here and you figure out what the hell you want to do from there.
So, well, I mean, I remember having some, like, early on being in New York, because I was studying architecture and I had interned and I really enjoyed going to school for it. It was a lot of fun, but I realized pretty quickly, like, oh God, like, I don't have the fire in the belly for this day in, day out. But I was also taking, like, screenwriting classes at school, and I was doing sound design classes and stuff. And we had my friend Daniel Shar on here. We met and wrote some terrible plays together and in, like, senior year. But yeah, then I moved to New York and I got in the art department, cause that's my skill set. But I remember, like, you know, sort of like walking the halls, like, looking for directors to talk to and, like, asking them questions about, like, well, what is it you actually do? And, like, how do you actually prep? Like, what does that look like? What do you have to, like, how, you know, and all of them said the same thing, which is just like, go and shoot, like, shoot, you know, wherever, like, you know. And if you're lucky, I think, I was lucky enough to meet Alan Taylor on Bored to Death, and he's like, go shoot. If you're lucky, like, the 20th thing that you direct will be good, you know? And that's just, you know, you just keep going, like, okay.
It's an interesting, and it's sort of interesting to me, seeing a director's process kind of close up now, in a way that I didn't from a managerial standpoint. And kind of how, I don't know, like, I guess ineffable it is. Like, I think, if you're a writer, you write, right? You sit down, you're banging your head against the wall trying to figure out an idea for something, and then you figure out that idea, and you start outlining it, and then, you know, you eventually get to pages, and you get to rewrites, et cetera, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sit down and just sort of do it. You know, actors need a platform, but they can just do what they do, right?
Yeah, and in the meantime, they can look good on Instagram.
Exactly, yeah.
That's what their daily job is. But what does a director do every day?
What does a director do every day? And that's been sort of an interesting experience to see close up, and it's unique. I mean, like, I don't know if he's going to be listening to this, but, you know, I've visited Hiro on set on a number of occasions, and when he's on set, he's in, like, he's this, like, smiling, like, you know, like joyful person, you know, very calm, very collected, and like, and usually he's just having fun,
which is funny because when he's not on set, he's such a fucking asshole.
I know. I know. He's an emotional terrorist.
So I really hope he doesn't listen to this. Hiro, don't listen to this.
No, but it's interesting to see, because, you know, we're sharing an office now and you know, have a lot more proximity to each other. I think the work that's being done, in addition to us sort of figuring out what do we want to make, you know, and building a little bit of a slate and trying to figure out the timeline for stuff and the sort of logistics of putting projects together, there's also, you know, a whole thing that I think directors have to do, which is to try to take in a lot of stuff, you know, and to consume a lot, whether that's films or art or photography or literature or any number of sort of things about the world.
Yeah,
you have to, like, consume it all, right?
Yeah.
So I've seen him now on a number of occasions just, like, sitting at a laptop, like, hands in his hair, almost looking completely stressed out as he's just, like, taking in a lot of things. And so that ideally synthesizes into something new. Right.
Well, and I think there's also, so I mean, I got, like, getting that advice, I was like, well, I'm broke, so what do I do? I was 22. So I with my fine art background, and I was drawing, and that's actually, that launched a storyboard career, but which gives you, like, a seat right next to the director. So that was the most, that was my film school, but, like, it is funny.
That's sort of where Hiro started as well, is storyboarding.
Oh, yeah.
He did some storyboarding early on.
Yeah.
And DPing and but he's also
place to learn a lot. But I do remember I was working with Scott Derrickson on Deliver Us from Evil, and I met him at this cafe in Glendale to go over the shot list, and we're sitting there, and he goes, "Haha, see that picture right there?" And I was like, "Yeah." And it was this kind of like kind of blood red and navy blue, just like kind of furniture scene. He's like, "Yeah, that's the color palette for Ellison's office for Sinister." And he's like, I was literally writing Sinister in here, and, like, that was,
oh,
you
that's
know.
Funny.
So it's just funny because it is that just, like, looking around, constantly taking photos and images and people and meeting, like, trying not to, you know, just hang out with film people and, like, talk to,
I think that's actually really important to find a, as a filmmaker, director in particular, like find a basis of, I don't know, I guess like this is going to sound really kind of pretentious, but like like an aesthetic vocabulary that doesn't, you know, where other films are just a small portion of it, you know? I think it's really, really important to have a broad sense of, you know, visual art knowledge and music and a lot, you know, a lot of different things that sort of all synthesize together when you're thinking about directing. You know, and it's funny, I think that like, I don't know, did you guys both go to the Guillermo del Toro like exhibit thing that they did at, like,
okay. I think I missed it too. I went to the Kubrick one, but.
Well, they like, you know, they pulled like so much of just a ton of stuff out of his house and like put in this exhibit, right? And it was everything from like, you know, full scale maquettes of like stuff of like characters that Doug Jones would play to like, you know, old like Evergory like prints and different things. But and it, you know, you walk through and you're like, really? Does this guy really do this in his house? But like, it kind of makes sense because there's so much. Again, that you have to pull from different sort of visual mediums.
I think especially
to, like, create something new.
I mean, yeah, Guillermo del Toro is a good example of a director that I think just loves what he loves all the things in his movies more than maybe anybody else does. And like, you know, there can be, I'm sure there's a good and a bad side to that. But like when you watch his movie, there's no doubt that every detail was something like chosen, and that comes from having all that stuff in that same way. And I think as a writer, it's probably harder to, because of, like you said, like you can just sit down and do it. So giving yourself the discipline to actually consume things and like be inspired, because it just like there's the myth that everything just like comes internally just automatically, that you can just sit down and think of a great idea. And if you can write something, you know, technically you can write a script in a weekend. So it seems like it was like, well, why don't I write one every week? And it's like, because you're going to run out.
Yeah.
And it's like, and so it's like, at least with directing the discipline,
it's
because
like
you can't
ideas,
direct
you
every day.
You run out of like, the feeling that got you there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all of that. Yeah. But I do think it's funny. I was texting Ben because I was in Seattle with my sister had, she works for Boeing and she had meetings. And so she has a baby. So my mom and I went up and we're watching the baby and I'm walking through this hotel and there are all these conferences going on. And it's like, that's a great example of like, I literally just going from the room down to breakfast back up. But I'm like, stopping, I'm like, oh, they all have lanyards. Like I hear one guy like pull a guy aside and he's like, listen, Steve, like when you're making the sale, they like, you know, he's giving them like the pep talk and stuff. And it's like, and you see everyone filing in, like grabbing their donut holes and like getting their coffee and they're all in line. And you know, you see like the placard that says like, you know, Education First Summit 2019 forever good. Like, and you know, it's just like that whole world. And I'm like, so I texted him like, well, I think I might have like a comedy set.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like,
they're in a Coen Brothers movie right now.
Right, like, right.
The big sales conference thing.
Yeah. But like, just keeping your eyes open and looking around. So wait, should we try in cahoots?
Yeah, let's try and do one. So I don't
have to.
Yep.
You can
Go. We can cut anything out. Yeah, we can.
Well, you can probably like give me a little bit of what we do here.
Yeah.
Oh, no. We have like titles of movies that don't exist that we either get from, you know, we overhear them or we think of them or they're just things. And we just sort of say it out loud and try to come up with what a movie is.
Okay.
So it's and they don't have to be good, and sometimes it's like
fun when they aren't.
Yeah.
So we're gonna riff and break a movie.
Yeah. So let's try and do some titles.
Great.
When I was falling asleep last night, I was stressed out thinking that we didn't have enough good ideas. And as I was falling asleep, I was trying to
I feel
think
like you're also sort of like have a bit of PTSD when you have to like come and pitch me spec ideas.
Always.
Like real ones.
Always. That's the scariest.
He just lives on a spectrum of like
me just being like, no.
So this is like, this is a new phase of our relationship where you don't have the same kind of power over me. You know, but I'm still going to embarrass myself.
There we go.
Okay. So this is, and I'm telling this one because it's so bad that there's probably nothing in it. But as I was falling asleep,
as you were
like,
sundowning.
Yeah. thinking about a funny title, and I wrote it. I reached for my phone and wrote it down. And when I woke up this morning, I was like, oh, what was that great title I came up with? And I looked at it, and the title was Steakhouse. I don't know what.
But is it STAKE? And are we doing like?
Well, this is the fun thing because we had that right. Like for example with our Witch Justice episode. Like there's witch like pointy witch, hat.
Yeah.
There's witch like which one? Yeah. So okay, sometimes so steakhouse.
Steakhouse. I mean. The obvious thing is that it's like a vampire movie.
Yes.
Right? And that was probably enough to get me to write it down.
Uh-huh. I was going straight for the steakhouse. Just
well,
like
you used to work meat. At a steakhouse.
I did. I worked at Outback Steakhouse.
So
I served up blooming onions.
Yeah. So what's
to the good
I mean,
folks of Missouri.
Would you write a comedy about your time at Outback Steakhouse called Steakhouse?
Well, see, now we're getting kind of back into like that movie Waiting or like what
yeah,
you know,
referencing
yeah.
that one. I don't
but,
know why. I've never even seen it.
No, I mean, I kind of got nothing for Steakhouse. Okay, so
because it's terrible. That's why.
Okay, wait, let's do Vampire. You want to do Vampire?
I mean, is it a vampire movie that takes place with teenage employees at a steak at like a Outback Steakhouse? Is it
no,
like
see,
is
I
it
was
like
thinking
Fright Night
more...
that takes place like or something? I don't
here's
know.
What I first thought was Steakhouse. As soon as
there's a lot of garlic that goes into steak marinade. That's the only issue here.
Oh, hey.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, you know.
Well, okay, so have you guys been to Harry Potter Land?
No.
At Universal?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And then you go pick out. So you go pick out your wand. You go through the whole thing or not, whatever. But you go to the wand store.
Uh-huh.
And
if you like fun, you pick out your wand.
Yeah, if you like Nate hates fun. So
yeah, exactly.
Anyway. And so, but it's like this wonky thing that, you know, is fun mm-hmm. and the drawers are all like sideways and, you know, whatever.
You
so
like,
you pick,
you like buy it. It's like a wand store, basically.
Yeah, it is yeah. a wand store. And like they'll totally, I mean, depending on how, what your excitement level is going in there, they'll like really appease you and like get you uh-huh. going if you're just like a total uber fan. Like I watched one girl just like freak out and you know they're like surrounding her being like yes this is your wand, you know, making a whole thing of it. But you could
yes,
have
take the most expensive one.
But you could have a steakhouse that's like selling steaks for vampires that's like Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like you go around and you pick out your...
I feel like we're reaching on this.
Yeah.
We're all
it's like we're making it. No.
Yeah,
exactly.
Wait,
so it's a place. I mean, I guess it's a place right. where you people who know that vampires are real.
It's like in the
go
in
and
the,
shop for their steaks because everyone has a vampire following them.
Yeah, it's like if in the extended oh, Buffy the Vampire Slayer,
it's a purveyor of steaks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like you have a special steak that you.
Right. Right. Well, then.
And in this world, everyone yeah. has a vampire following them. So it's like I have to right. go pick out a steak that's going to be appropriate mm-hmm. for my vampire, so I don't die.
Yeah. I feel like maybe it's
a little bit it follows.
This is like a True Blood like spin-off TV show about just like, you know, the
it's a True Blood spin-off sitcom that's like it's like Clerks, but it's just the people that work at the steak
yeah,
shop.
Just the steak shop that sells steaks.
Yeah,
exactly.
And it's just like a bunch of mundane vampire world problems that they discuss.
Right,
like
right, right.
Some really like light workplace drama.
But you have to kind of like find a like they have to find a way to stand out in their marketplace.
Yeah,
because mm-hmm. like there's only so many ways you can reinvent a steak.
Well, and like vampires are always like, you're always catching them like, you know, in the floorboards trying to get the secrets and trying to like stay ahead of you. So like you're having to like, you know, swerve all the time.
There's a lot of corporate espionage in this world.
Yeah,
I mean, honestly, I find the vampire genre in general to often be pretty stale, and I would probably
yeah.
watch something that was like if there was something that was like this minute. In, yeah. in this like specific of a thing, I'd probably be engaged on that level.
I mean, totally. You could even. I haven't watched the show. What happens? Mm-hmm. What is it? In the Shadows or?
Oh, is that out?
What We Do in Shadows?
Yeah. I love the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you watched it?
No, I haven't seen it yet. No, but one of
that's
our
probably
one of our
thing.
One of the writers in Atlanta is
yeah,
like
yeah.
is like yeah
because
like,
it's
yeah,
with at your network.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
yeah,
that's probably the closest.
I love the
thing.
Tone,
I think that's as far as we're getting.
Yeah. No, but then also steakhouse is also like a stakeout, so that could also be
yeah.
Like I mean I don't.
Well, there was that movie called Stakeout and Stakeout 2.
Oh, no.
With Emilio Estevez.
And Rosie O'Donnell.
Emilio.
Was she in that?
I don't know.
Is Richard Dreyfuss,
I'm assuming.
I think?
Yes.
Yeah. I never saw that movie.
All right. So we have some right. we have some real gems for Steakhouse.
That's mm-hmm. terrible. Okay.
I know what the poster's going to be. Just a giant steak.
Do you want to pick one, Kate?
Oh, I did have another one that's like, this one's not great either. But remember Roots?
Oh, God.
Which...
Which is not the TV show roots.
This is just well, because what happened was I think I was on my way. I went with my family to Biltmore House in Asheville, North Carolina, and it actually originated in the car just because we passed all these little shops on the way going up toward it, and it was someone said, oh, like roots, and someone goes, well, what is that? And so like my aunt's like, a place to cut your hair. And then someone's like, oh, or do they sell plants? And I was like, cahoots.
But are these movie titles or are these business ideas that you guys are coming up with? Because I feel like that would fly here in town. Just like a place where
you get your hair cut and you buy a
plant. Well, you don't get your hair cut. You just get your roots done and you can pick up a plant along the way.
Yeah. A succulent, of course.
I feel like it's the same marketplace. I think that would work well. Yeah.
Well, it'd be really funny if this whole podcast was a joke to get to try and trick you into investing in our plant, our nursery hair salon business idea.
You know, I'm getting there. I'm getting there with this idea.
That's your next, that's your next evolution, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
Wait, do we have any really good titles, though, that aren't just...
I mean, I had one that I saw on Twitter that could be something. I mean, we never have good ones. They just turn out good or they don't. But I did, I saw...
I mean, Nasty Little Fix was good that last week.
Yeah.
Nasty Little Fix.
Yeah, that was our newest episode.
Okay.
No, but you know, that was a... You had tweeted some, didn't you?
Yeah. I'm really letting everybody down here. Well, okay, let's try this one. I had a thing I saw. Somebody on Twitter was talking about a thing in the news, and they used the phrase blood errors. And I liked that a lot.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know what it would be. Blood errors.
Blood errors.
You could kind of see that on it. That seems like a title of something.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
I have no idea.
So what if it's like a movie about, you know, like Mike from Breaking Bad, the wet work guy, who's just like cleaning everything up?
It's like
it's like a group of those guys.
Yeah,
that,
it's like
work together, correcting all the blood errors that.
Right.
It's
the cleanup crew.
But there's like, what's the specific or?
Or like, yeah, like I'm now envisioning just like. Something that follows like a guy like the wolf from Pulp Fiction, where it's just a dude that's like there to like, you know, figure out these like hitman fuck ups.
Or what if it like now I'm trying to imagine like some heightened version of like, because there's like where if somebody like figures out like some way to like replace DNA, like some sort of like super specific like cleanup, but also like planting DNA to frame other people or something. Like it's somebody who's like a blood expert on all of these things that is like the super specialized, you know, sort of.
I'm picturing for some reason kind of like an 80s like noirish sort of Adrian Lyne meets Body Heat kind of
blood errors, like a lot of saxophones.
There's a lot of saxophones in the title of that, like the title sequence of that,
like smoke blowing.
But you know, like, could be interesting the idea of I remember when I was younger, I went to the FBI, like in DC, the FBI tour
that
you can do, and you like see the lab. It's like, what if you had I guess this would probably be in like the wolf show of like the cleanup crew or something, but then you had like someone on the inside like messing with the actual data that's coming out of like a place like an FBI blood lab, or so it's like it's a conspiracy show. Or not, I guess not conspiracy, but like a, I mean, you could involve the government, like, right?
Sure,
like people,
sure,
whatever stuff's happening, like, so these guys are cleaning up for.
It's like somebody who's sort of, I'm just like thinking out loud, like somebody who's sort of like playing both sides of the thing. Like basically like the FBI's like DNA expert that also, you know, is sort of can be hired out by people to sort of clean up things or fake things to frame other people. Like he's a sort of like double agent within the world of crime and, you know, justice.
And like sharing information both ways.
Yeah.
So what we think is an error.
Yeah,
is not so.
Well, because it's like, the idea that like, that like DNA didn't even become like a thing that you could fuck with until like the late 90s, mid 90s, that it was like an actual trusted thing. But the idea that like it's like, you know, nobody except this guy understands it, and to this day probably, like, you know, it's like it's taken as a given that it's just sort of like a a type of evidence mm-hmm. that we use, but no one really gets it. So the one guy that understands it can manipulate it.
And he could also, mm-hmm. he could be some, like, whoever that person in history was that sort of, like, broke through as far as,
mm-hmm.
like on the science side of, like, DNA, you know, being something that you use in cases and everything. It's like, if it's that guy,
mm-hmm.
so he's, like, 70 years old,
mm-hmm.
and he's working both sides. And since he's the guy who sort of, quote-unquote, invented it.
Yeah. That's actually kind of cool.
There, yeah. Yeah. You know? So we're now, I think we're in procedural crime, yeah. you know, yeah. sort, feels, of, sort of territory. Yeah.
Blood errors totally sounds like a CBS, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or like, yeah, I mean, I guess.
It's also like a little bit Americans. I mean, like in yeah. terms of just.
Yeah, that's kind of, I think that would be the tone. Is it, yeah, like a semi-retired DNA expert goes rogue in a sort of Breaking Bad type fashion,
uh-huh.
using his DNA and his knowledge of
he's
DNA
vigilanteism.
To work for criminals yeah. because he spent so much time working for like the, you know,
right.
for justice and seeing the gray area that all that really lives in, that maybe he could have just been profiting off of this the whole time instead
right.
of doing good, and decides, you know what, fuck it. Like, no one understands this right. shit more than me. And then you probably have like, so it's like, that's like, I don't know who plays that part, you know.
John Lithgow?
Yeah, probably. So you have John Lithgow, and then you probably have, like, your young FBI, currently uh-huh. employed FBI guy, that starts to recognize the pattern, and it becomes, like, a cat and mouse
yep.
thing.
Oh.
Of, like, his mentor is the guy doing the thing, and he
we're
doesn't
like
want to
we're, like, in Killing Eve
it.
Territory,
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. What if he's also got a bit of, like, maybe he's, like, a blood expert, like a blood
yeah.
spatter expert.
Yeah.
And now he's like in, you know, like,
I mean,
like
in Dexter, like, kind of, but like
that's
I
in
guess,
Dexter.
Yeah.
yeah. But he's like he's painting crime scenes to look like one thing when a different thing happened there.
Yeah. Well, I think the older guy's the one doing these things and the younger guy, it's like almost like, you know, there's a bit of like a Hannibal type of, I mean, I never saw Dexter, so I'm sure it's in that too, but like where it's like the younger guy can start to recognize the intentionality of it. And it's
this
almost like there's
so
sort of
specific
coded messages yeah. to each other through like the way the blood is the thing and stuff.
Well, and like, I mean, with yeah. Dexter, it was between mm-hmm. him and his sister. So his sister's also
okay.
a cop. So it was like, she just started noticing like thing, like with these victims, whatever, whatever. And, you know, eventually was like, hey bro,
yeah. that's funny.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we have a CBS procedural here for sure.
Yeah,
that's
do you want to make some calls? Should we?
Yeah, just see what I can do.
Blood
fantastic.
Errors. I mean, do we deserve another one? We should do.
Yeah, let's keep rolling.
We got another like 15 minutes.
Before. Yeah, let's throw one out there.
What were the ones you tweeted, man? I need to go back and look at.
We might have done all of them, and I can cut out this gap, this pause. While I think, well, this is a weird. This is a weird one that I was trying to just do word association. I don't remember where this one came from. I was sitting at my computer procrastinating yesterday, and I was trying to just pick a word.
Do you think one day you'll take one of these titles and be like, actually, there's a screenplay in here.
Oh, we've cut.
Oh, you're already doing
cut
this.
Two segments from the show because they were too good and very like on the was it the last one or two episodes ago?
I think it was like two ago. But.
Two episodes ago, we had one that we're like, fuck, that's actually pretty good, and so nobody got to
funny.
Hear it, and we're figuring it out. But okay, let's see if this one does anything for you.
Yeah,
fantastic teeth. No idea.
Yeah. Oh man. I mean, there's something very ominous about that in a weird way. And I'm like, I'm also like, it's a weird like juxtaposition of words.
That was
you know?
That was the point. I was trying
right.
to put two words that kind of had a friction
right.
to each other.
But in
other.
Like a velvet buzzsaw or
yeah.
you know mm-hmm. Vox Lux sort of weird way. Like I'm definitely picturing something very like Nick Reffin-y or strange about
oh,
this.
Oh, interesting. As soon as I said it, I started thinking, and I was like, it almost sounds like it would be like a Christopher Guest movie about dentists.
Well, see,
I can
my,
see that.
Mine was like more what Nate's saying. My first thought, because I was thinking like, you have this celebrity dentist in Hollywood, and
yeah.
you riff on the word fan. So, like,
mm-hmm. wow, you go for the puns, which I really appreciate.
I know, I love it. I definitely do. Yeah. But, uh-huh. but yeah, like somebody who's like, you know, those who's that lawyer that has all those fantastic billboards with the mustache.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, like he's Fred got Loya.
Well, there's like a couple of them in LA that have like these bus ads that are like, yeah. that are either injury like attorneys or drunk yeah. driving attorneys, you know?
Like, but like the Dennis version of that guy.
Yeah, the Dennis
know?
Version of
Who's
that
like,
guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind
yeah,
of,
I like this.
Whatever the yeah. Hollywood, like, so what is the story? I don't know. Is it like an actress that comes in there and. Like, you know, I don't know. Like, once she comes in to consult, and then it's sort of this like downhill thing of like,
yeah,
is he like killing people? I don't know.
I mean,
I think even just a full on obsession movie, right? Like, yeah, a 1 hour photo sort of thing
yeah.
with a cosmetic dentist and you know, and
oh, like he's kind of like a fucked up weird guy that becomes obsessed
like
with
of course he is
Nightcrawler.
Oh, because I was gonna say oh, is it like a which I've never even seen this show, but is it like Ray Donovan but he's a dentist or something?
He's a fixer
but for teeth.
Yeah, no, yeah,
like somebody
like Jennifer Lawrence gets her teeth knocked out of the bar before she has to be on set the next day, and it's like you get the fucking guy to come do a house call and get a, you know, it's like
no,
I'm sure that exists.
He's like, the Michael Clayton of like last minute teeth repair.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah,
hell yeah.
Yeah.
No, but
yeah.
like a good like stalker, like swim fan, or like
yeah. No, I like
right.
kind
we
of
love a good stalker movie.
Like, yeah. like the idea that that he is this professional thing, but he's also sort of like obsessed with one of his.
Yeah, like okay, let's say like you want to be.
We haven't had a good female driven stalker movie in a while. Now that you mentioned swim fan, like the idea of
yeah,
you know.
And
yeah.
Oh, so it's a female dentist who's like obsessed with like George Clooney's teeth or something.
Yeah, something like that.
But that's
and
really
I mean,
good.
there's kind of an interesting thing of like, I mean, this is a lot of legwork, but like if you wanted to be in and around like glamorous celebrity people,
right?
But you're not sort of, I don't know, one of them for whatever reason, and you yeah. can't get in the industry. And I mean, it's a lot of work to go to dental school and whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, you can imagine that person that's like, well, this is my opportunity to be closest to them, and mm-hmm. it's through this like. Side door
yeah.
doing their teeth and then
and knocking like, them unconscious.
Yeah.
Well, there's something so vulnerable and weird about yeah. that relationship. Like, I don't know, man. This is a terrifying admission, but I'm gonna say it in a public way.
Oh, thank God.
I think there were like close to 7 years that I didn't see a dentist. Cause I just,
oh, no, same here.
Yeah, yeah. I just did, and like finally I got like really good dental care, and I was like, all right, and I, you know, I'm an adult. I should do this. I should make this more of a thing. And like the first thing you do when you go to the dentist for the first time in a long time is like a deep clean and like a full on check it all out. Like, you know, let's see if there are any cavities or anything they need to be taken care of. So, you know, they did this, but they were like, okay, you got to come in. We're going to schedule like 2 hours. And I'm going to sedate you lightly, you know. And so I just like picked out like 3 albums, threw them in a playlist, put on my headphones. They, you know, gassed me and then like, you know, did like a deep clean. And it's like a very weird experience because you kind of feel like you've drank like an entire bottle of wine by yourself or something.
Yeah.
And just have to sit there, you know, in this experience. So it's like, you know, there's something so strangely like vulnerable about that sort of relationship that I wonder if that, you know.
No, I think that's good, though, because
there's something very, yeah, like, who draws somebody to that line of work, and especially if you want it in proximity to,
oh,
like.
Oh, it's deeply,
I also think,
you know. Weird.
I also think, too, yeah. like, you think about other, you know, sort of, like, bodily injury. If you get in a car accident and you go to the ER or something, like, mm-hmm. typically that's such a, like, you don't really have control over that. You're in an ambulance, you do the thing, like, you're passed out, whatever.
Right.
But Annie Brand, who we always bring up, one of my best friends, like she actually fell and had emergency dental work done.
Uh-huh.
So it's that thing where like she's conscious. It's not like she's just being thrown in an ambulance and like you're just at the mercy of whatever. So it's like she's got to go look online, look up an emergency dentist, trust that person's going to take care of her, go in there. It's like there's so much more, like you're saying, like conscious vulnerability as opposed to just like, now you're in the ER and like you have no say.
Right, exactly.
No, and it's super weird because when you actually pull out and think about it.
The pain of your, anything like drives
you crazy.
By the
way, wasn't Jennifer Aniston's character in Horrible Bosses like a high-powered dentist?
Oh, was she?
Maybe.
I can't remember.
There is a horror movie called The Dentist with Corbin Burnson, I think.
Of course there is.
And I used to own it. And he was just like a normal dentist that kind of like goes insane and I think kills somebody and then has to cover it up or something. I can't remember all the details of it, but our movie's much better. But no, after I didn't go to the dentist for like 7 or 8 years, I found one that literally is like across the street, like and I started going, and it's like this adorable Armenian woman, you know, who's like a kindly sort of like motherly, you know, figure in. But I was so, she doesn't do the gas. And I was like, and so I'm more conscious when I do it. And I just had time to think about the fact that I'm like, it's so fucking weird that I'm going to a stranger and laying on my back with my mouth open for 2 hours or whatever. And like she had like an assistant as well. And so it's just these two women in this tiny office and me. And it's like, it started to feel really like fetishy. It's like,
yeah.
I was like, it's like almost like this is like seems like a weird thing. I should be like paying them in like a, you know, almost like a, yeah, like this is some sort of BDSM weird, like it just feels strange.
There's a pretty great movie called Novocaine with Steve Martin and Helen Bonham Carter. Actually,
I remember when that came out
in that space, but
it's like 2001.
And Steve Martin, this is his lane, because remember Little Shop of Horrors?
Too. Oh yeah, right. Yeah, he likes playing weird dentists, doesn't he? Okay. All right.
Got our cast.
Because people have there probably is dental fetishes, right? There's got to be
There's fetishes for everything.
But no, I like this. I like this actually. The more I think about it, the more I'm sort of set on that it's got to be
like a lady,
like a female. Yeah, like a female dentist.
I think that's cool.
Like,
it's much cooler that way.
Yeah,
kind of. I mean, yeah. Like if it is sort of a Nightcrawler or Velvet Buzzsaw or like in that lane, like yeah, having her be whatever it is, like a big superstar, yeah, it's like an emergency issue, and then that's sort of the catalyst of, like,
yeah, it's like, so if it's, like, female dentist, and it's, like, she gets the call at 2 a.m. that George Clooney, like, chipped his tooth doing cocaine in a, you know, thing, and she's got to, like, be the... George Clooney probably doesn't do cocaine with the kids and stuff.
Now we're going to get sued.
I think he's cleaned it up.
Yeah, I mean,
he's a father, man.
It's an example.
Right.
Okay, it's Jared Leto's doing cocaine, and she gets the call to...
In his airplane hangar that he lives in.
Yeah, and so it's the woman who... mild-mannered, you know, Los Angeles dentist that almost has this sort of obsession thing activated when she's summoned to, like, this movie star that she's,
got a
like,
very kind
had
of mundane
crushing.
Life, right?
And then now she's in the, you know, this fancy world, and she's now touching this man that she's had, and it's like now she just becomes obsessed with, like, wanting to see him again and coming, and it's like, and it becomes, like, it's sort of a spiraling
into
the...
Well, and then here's
the
other really fucked up thing, too, is, like, if you're just laid out, you're having, like, a root canal, like you're saying, like you're kind of
in like a twilight space.
And it's like she gets in that moment, she's like, I'm gonna actually do this incorrectly, so he has to come back.
And
just set the whole thing. I mean, that's so scary. That's like your worst nightmare.
Trust these people, like we assume all dentists are good at their jobs, and it's absolutely can't be true, and some of them can be bad people. Like some of them can be weird and could be like an auto mechanic or
but
something.
Like she's really good at what she does, so therefore she knows how to do it badly and knows how to like also pitch it like, oh, it wasn't me being bad, let me come back in and I'll
there's more steps, it was the problem was worse than I thought, and,
drilling
tiny holes in his teeth to like fake cavities to do fake cavities that need to be filled later.
I feel like this all ends in some sort of weird trepanation situation.
Using
a dentist drill to trepan someone? Oh, my God.
Well, and she...
It'd actually work really well.
She, somehow puts herself in that, like, the George Clooney's assistant's...
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, she like finds out where that person's getting coffee and starts like mentoring them. Maybe it's like another young girl. So she's like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm. But she like, and then the assistant doesn't even know that she's a dentist.
Yeah,
and like, the whole courting of the.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it. Right. I think that's a strong note.
So the last question for you in both capacities. How bad of an idea is it that we give away free ideas on this thing? And do you think that the fact that we record them, because on earlier episodes we would say, our reps don't even know about this. I wonder if they'd be mad if they heard us giving away free ideas. Do you think the fact that we record these means that no one can rip them off because we can just prove that we had it first? That's my thinking.
I think, I think you established a little bit of chain of title here.
Chain of title was another one we've actually done.
We did with Evan Dixon.
We did that with Evan Dixon,
Yeah, there's a little bit of IP establishment, but
well, everybody's optioning podcasts now, anyways.
You know, I don't, but I don't. nobody's making fantastic teeth, buddy.
You say that, motherfucker. But maybe we're going to make it.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll see what we can do.
Well, thanks for coming on, Nate.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun. We packed a lot in there.
Yeah.
Cool. I think that's so right.
You're on Twitter and stuff. Do you want people to follow you on
Twitter?
This is where you get
right, I guess
thirsty.
I do that, don't I? I don't even know what my Twitter is, strangely. I think it's Nate_Madison, MATTESON.
Yeah, it's @Nate_Madison.
@Nate_Madison, there you go. Yeah. And then, I don't know, just, stay tuned for more stuff that we're doing.
Keep your eye open for Nate, because you're going to be hearing about stuff that he does.
And maybe we'll strong arm him to coming back on.
I think we probably will.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah. So more next time.
Yep. Thanks, y'all.
Thank you.